This audio is brought to you by Cotant Family Dentistry, where advanced dental technology meets compassionate, patient-centered care.
Good morning. Sign of God, please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
With the prerogative of the chair, I do want to welcome the Wyoming Senate President, Mr. Ogden Driscoll, is here. Senator Driscoll, any wisdom to share with us this morning?
Not very much wisdom. I thank you for the ability to be here, and nice to see things going the way they should be. I feel for all of you for the fires and what's going on and what we can do to help in any way.
Ogden has always been a good friend to this county and to all of us, so it's a pleasure to have him here with us today. Commissioners, we will have one addition to the agenda, and that is I just need ratification of the signature on the letter to the governor for our USDA disaster declaration, so we can deal with that at the end of the meeting. Before your minutes, we had a special meeting as well as a regular meeting on the 20th. Were there any additions, corrections, or substitutions?
I don't see. Make a motion to accept the minutes.
Second.
There is a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. First up before you is Resolution 736. This is a request from our Deputy County Attorney for authorization to appoint a special prosecutor. This is Resolution 736, a resolution authorizing the appointment of a special prosecutor. Whereas Deputy Johnson County and Prosecuting Attorney has become aware of a criminal case in which the prosecution of the defendant in the case by Johnson County Attorney's Office would result in either a conflict of interest or the appearance of impropriety. And whereas the Deputy Johnson County and Prosecuting Attorney has entered into an agreement with Dan Itzen, who is duly elected District Attorney for Natrona County, Wyoming, and for his designated deputy, and whereas pursuant to this agreement, Dan Itzen has agreed to assist the Johnson County and Prosecuting Attorney by prosecuting the case, and whereas Dan Itzen has agreed to perform the aforementioned legal services without compensation for Johnson County, and whereas Wyoming Statutes 183-02 and 183-107 authorize such appointment of counsel with approval of the Johnson County Board of Commissioners, and this action is in the interest of Johnson County, Wyoming. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of County Commissioners of Johnson County, Wyoming consent to the appointment of Dan Itzen, District Attorney for Natrona County, to serve as Special Prosecutor and Prosecuting Attorney in this particular case dated this third day of September 2024. Commissioners, there is the resolution. What is your pleasure?
I make a motion to approve Resolution 736.
I'll second that motion.
There is a motion and a second. Before we discuss it, do either of you have any questions for Mr. Crego on the statute or this authorization?
No.
Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor of approving Resolution 736, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next agenda item, we do have annual appointments to the Harold Girard Park Board. It looks like we have a couple of applicants in your packet. Kristen, how many seats do we have on the Harold Girard Park Board?
Two.
Two. And these serve how many years?
They serve 4 years.
Okay. Commissioners, you have 2 4-year appointments to the Harold Girard Park Board.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we accept both of these applications, Mr. Straub and Mr. Other. Mona Gilbert.
Yeah. Hannah Gibbler. There, Commissioner. So if you go back one page.
Okay.
All right. There is a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. It has been moved and seconded to reappoint Mr. Dave Straub and appoint Hannah Gibbler to the Harold Gerard Park Board for 4-year terms, commencing the 1st of August. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. You will also recall that we have appointments, three appointments for the Comprehensive Land Use Steering Committee. I see that Mr. Waller has joined us. Does look like at this point, commissioners, we only have two of the three names from the Casey area, and I'm going to look to Mr. Waller to see if there's potential that anyone else came in through the mail.
I didn't get anything in the mail. I checked this morning. So just those two applicants as of today. That would put 17 or 16 with the two planning and zoning members and then these two additional members. So.
I think that the
KC
area will be pretty well represented by the two people on with or applying to be on the board. I'd like to see one more, but both of these people are well known in the area and we'll take this appointment very seriously.
I'll make the motion to approve Wayne Graves and Nathan Williams to the steering committee.
I second that motion.
And leave the third spot open for a while just to see. Are you good with that, Jim?
It has been moved and seconded to appoint Wayne Graves and Nathan Williams. Any further discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Right, we have a quarterly update on TANF. So Kristen, walk us through where we are on our TANF grants.
Okay, so this year's TANF grant isn't much different than last year's. We still have the three entities that we're distributing the grant money to is the Buffalo Children's Center, the Boys and Girls Club of the Bighorns, and the Compass Center for Families. The state of Wyoming gave Johnson County $61,000 for the TANF grant with the $5,494 administrative costs. Each entity will get $18,503.33. On the top of your packet is the quarterly report and invoice that each of the three will have to fill out in detail to receive each of their quarterly money. Go to the back sheet of that. It expands out how each one plans on spending their grant money. At the top, you can see the $5,490 for administrative costs. And then if you go down to salaries, the Buffalo Boys and Girls Club is spending $3,715 towards salaries. And then if you go a little lower, they're spending $285 on employer payroll taxes, $203.34 for supplies, and $4,300 towards rent and utilities. And then the next one down in the spreadsheet is the Boys and Girls Club. They're spending $18,503.33 towards salaries. And then the next one is the Buffalo Children's Center, which is $16,000 they're spending towards rent and utilities, and $2,503.33 towards participants, class supplies, and materials. At the bottom, you can see the subtotals, $55,510 and $5,490 for administrative costs for the total of $61,000. The next part in your packet is the cover page and each entity proposal, and I put tabs on there if you wanted to see the breakdown of each one. And on the tabs, it shows at the bottom how many participants they're planning to serve and the cost per each TANF participant. And then behind the next part of your packet is the actual contract, which Mr. Craigo has had a chance to look over. And behind that is just what the participant application eligibility form looks like that each individual underneath the and the piece has to fill out to get grant money to be served. Does anybody have any questions?
Nice job. Need to review this packet over the weekend. Were there any questions for Kristen or the county attorney's office?
Everything looked pretty much the same. Then.
It is. It's nearly identical.
Commissioners, what's your pleasure on the award of TANF funds to the three entities?
Move to approve the TANF quarterly report and invoice.
I'll second. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Mr. Craig, did you want that motion in a different fashion?
I think it needs to be to actually approve the contract.
Yep.
So, oh, okay. All right.
Move to approve the TANF contract.
We'll take that as a friendly amendment to your initial motion. Sorry. Chair's motion. Is it amenable to the seconder to approve the TANF contracts?
Yes.
Okay. We do have a motion and a second to approve the TANF contracts for the three entities, the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Bighorns, Buffalo Children's Center, and Compass Center for the Families. Commissioner, any discussion or questions? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. We are running a little bit ahead of schedule, so it's good to see our emergency management coordinator. Hopefully, he'll fill enough until the fire warden gets here. So, Jimmy, come on up and update us on where we are. Preliminary cost estimates and everything else.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so I did submit some notes mid last week, so some of that's been amended, and there's some updates to some things in the notes that I did submit last week in preparation for this. So, as it stands, the house draw fires consumed approximately 174,691 acres. 16,632 of that includes BLM land, 148,342 is private, 9,717 of state. This also involves 112,626 acres approximately of sage-grouse migration area that was impacted as a part of this fire. So as it stands, as of the 28th, that fire is 94% contained. I think you might have a typo that I did on that your side of it, which I amended. There was a lot of working with Mr. Waller to get, and a lot of these figures come off of those maps. There was a lot of compliments and thanks from the incident management team that's on site for his expediency and detail in those maps. They were very, very happy with the products that he produced for them and really is effective to what they were trying to do on their mission. So, obviously the Flat Rock, Remington, and Constitution, and now the newest one that popped up in Gillette over the weekend, the name leaves me at the moment, but obviously a lot of those are going on. Most of those are in a much better stages of containment. That incident management team, they're managing everything in our region at the moment, obviously because of the complexity of all the of everything and the monies, and then obviously the amount of personnel and everything else. So I am working fairly closely with the head liaison of that team, just trying to stay informed and see if there's anything else as far as their need. Obviously, a lot of that has begun to cool off a little bit, thankfully. But obviously, I'm doing my best to continue to remain in contact with them while they're here. When the fire initially started on the 21st, there were some evacuations that took place during the first about 2 days. Any sort of orders or recommendations to leave were lifted as of Friday the 23rd. The first approximately 24 hours since the fire began, we did have an emergency shelter stood up at Bomber Mountain Civic Center. We did have some people stop by, more or less to kind of just check on things, see if they could drop off pets or get information, and we direct them as they could. But seeing that we didn't have anybody staying at the shelter and that we were burning up resources there, we decided to close that with the understanding that if there was any needs, we would be able to reopen that at any point in time if we needed. So I got a lot of help from Kyle Jarvis and Jerry Osborne with setting that up and maintaining that for the first 24 hours. And they gave me the go-ahead to call them at any time of night if we needed to reopen it for any reason. So, and then I also want to mention Ray Klein from the American Red Cross, who came down and brought a bunch of water and was ready to staff it if we needed it. So that was super helpful. Lake Desmet was used as a water resource. I know we got the figures over the weekend as far as how many gallons, and I did not put them in my notes. But I do know that we used quite a bit from Super Scoopers on that, which was obviously very important. So Lake Healy was offered, but to my knowledge, I don't know that we used any water out of that, but I did get a call from that and did forward it over to fire when I got the call, I want to say on Thursday, the 22nd. There's been several utility companies that we've reached out to determine damage estimates. The one that we have heard back from is Powder River Energy. As of right now, they're telling me approximately 400 poles, but this is not just the house draw fire, but the other three that were going on when I was talking to them last week. So they're estimating about $800,000 in damage at minimum. So I know that the Office of Homeland Security is working to see if FEMA will allow us to combine all the regional fires and not just fire by fire as far as the damage estimates go. So I know that's in the works, and they haven't gotten a word back to me yet on whether or not that's going to go ahead or not. But if that is the case, then obviously we're going to have some much larger figures across all the fires, not just specific to the house draw. We have spoken with YDOT. Most of the fencing along I-90, they have confirmed, does belong to them. We've spoken to them, myself or my help that I had last week. Both of us have spoken to YDOT. We actually went over there and visited with them when we were not getting a whole lot of response, obviously because of how busy they are. And so they are still working on getting those figures back to us, but the majority of the fence along I-90 that's damaged is their responsibility and is currently being repaired as it is, as we speak. So I did reach out to Visionary. They confirmed that no infrastructure damage. Rocky Mountain Power also said the same thing. I have not heard back from Range or Basin Electric. I also did reach out to the Wyoming Electrical Association president. I have not heard back from him yet, so I can follow up with him as well, just to confirm we don't have any other outstanding electrical companies that are, or any sort of infrastructure that's damaged. Of note, I can tell you that the Flat Rock fire did burn through one of our radio tower locations and outside of Cheetah Canyon. The radio company did visit the site on Thursday. They confirmed that there was just nothing. The only damage that tower sustained was cosmetic. So that tower is one that we rent space on that we don't actually maintain. So, but it was worth at least confirming that. So regarding the Code Red system, this was heavily used in the first 12 hours of the incident. The first three notices that went out were used by iPod system, the integrated public alert warning system. That's because the obviously severity of the fire, the proximity to a lot of the interstates. So those went out. Those, unlike Code Red, do not require people to be signed up for it. So those go out to people who are within whatever geographical area that I indicate. So that's what those were used for. And that's why certain people got notices and certain people didn't. I do know that things did pop up on televisions and radios to let people know as well. So we did get a lot of phone calls about people asking for clarification, which we fielded over the first 2 days. I did push out a Code Red pre-evacuation notice the first night at about 10:30 p.m. that went out in the Irigaray Road area just to let the handful of folks that live in that area just know that the fire wasn't near and that we were working on it and just be prepared if they needed to leave. The only other Code Red that was sent out for any of the fire-related incidents that we were having in Johnson County occurred on that following Saturday. I apologize. I can't tell you the date right now. That was for the town of KC, just because we had four fires that came up there. So we did issue a Code Red after speaking with Pat Monroe just to confirm what we wanted to say. We just didn't want to create panic, but we wanted to let people know that it was in the area, that we were on it. So that's what we did. And fortunately, it seemed like we didn't get any phone calls from that, any sort of concern. We were just more or less public awareness, which was exactly what we sought to do. I think just talking about Code Red, this is a really good opportunity just to discuss the importance of that system. And I want to say how effective it was in this situation. I have received a lot of phone calls, people who want to sign up for it, which I've been very happy to do in between everything else that I've had going on. So sometimes it's a matter of me calling somebody back later that day or the following day, but we've been pretty well on top of that. And just kind of pushing forward on the momentum of all that stuff, we did go over to the senior center during lunch on Thursday and signed up several people, like 7 or 8 people there, just to make them aware of the Code Red system, just a good jumping off point to really continue to grow that system. I'd also think that this is a good opportunity just to recommend that, and I'd like to send out a countywide email to all of our employees, just anybody who's not already in that system, just to get them in there so that those notices are going out to our folks as well, so they obviously know what's going on. The debris management plan, we've just been going over that. This is obviously a huge part of the recovery aspect. I've had a lot of visits over at our solid waste district with Mr. Fox, and he's assured me that not only can they handle all the fence that's going to be coming their way, as long as it all doesn't show up at one time or 10 semi-trucks loads worth, it actually works in our favor. Most of the fence, from what I discovered, is once the fire goes through there, completely destroys it. So all that's got to be scrapped because it just becomes brittle and falls apart. So in discussing with Mr. Fox, he's assured me that they can handle it with their huge metal waste pile that they have there. That actually gets recycled and sent off. I'm sure you probably are aware of that, Mr. Perry. But they actually end up writing the count or the solid waste district a check for the recycling on that. So it actually works out, and we don't have to worry about coming up with money to find a place to dispose of it. Our ultimate goal was to recycle as much as we can, which is exactly what's going to happen. So that's a really good thing. And so I'm in good contact with Mr. Fox now. I'm actually going to loop him into the recovery coordination group, and he's also asked to be a part of our local emergency planning committee. So there should be a really good point of contact there. Regarding all the fence posts, I did ask him about that, about how much of a challenge that was going to be on our landfill. He again felt like we should be able to handle that here at our local site. And if it became such a big amount that came in that he felt in some of their expansion areas, he said that if they needed to go into those early, that they'd be willing to do that. So it's an ongoing plan. It's not obviously completely firmed up, but we are moving forward on those things. And when you look at the recovery coordination group, the fourth reports recovery support function is actually housing. And given the fact that we don't have a housing issue regarding this specific amount of this specific situation recovery, I've opted to move debris management out of the fifth and sixth functions and make that its kind of its own just because of the sheer scale of it. And so you'll see under my notes for the recovery coordination group, that's something I've worked with David Eads just with getting his blessing to have Kyle Jarvis kind of be the point of contact on that. And it's more or less just Kyle staying in contact with Mr. Fox and just confirming, hey, are you guys still good here? Do we need to come up with another plan? So it's just going to be it's just open dialogue, really, is what it is. We did have our first recovery coordination group meeting last Thursday, tentatively set to have our second meeting a week from this Thursday. I believe that's the 12th, if I remember right. The two main things that really that group that we talked about last week and what we're kind of looking forward to going as far as, and the whole point of this group is just to get this county back to being whole once again, back to the way it was before the incident. A big portion of that is what we're looking at in this situation. Obviously, the financial aspect, this group doesn't deal with the finances side. That's a lot of the fundraising part. So what we're looking at is the debris management mostly. And then really health and social services, a big thing that we talked about and that we're kind of looking into is just putting some mental health services out there, not just for the residents that are impacted, but also for the folks that have been out there fighting the fires themselves. This is obviously the biggest fire pretty much anybody's ever seen in this area. And there's a lot of catastrophic things that came with it. So just knowing, you know, just being ahead on that and putting those that resources out there to help manage people's mental health, which I think it goes without saying that's kind of a passion of mine to begin with. But we do have other things that are coming in, recovery support functions that we're looking at. A lot of these are more or less just institutional knowledge, making sure we're not overlooking anything. We did have a good response on Thursday. I did have Fish and Wildlife there. Game and Fish came out. A lot of different agencies that I really was having a hard time finding a point of contact with. So I picked an email and sent it out, and I got a good response. So that was very motivating to see that. And then as far as the end of my notes here, I think this is a really good example as to what the importance of things like Emergency Operations Center. Obviously, with fire, they've got their own, and they stand their own up, and that's exactly what they did. And I think that's an excellent thing. But if this was kind of any other incident, we'd be standing up our own Emergency Operations Center over at Emergency Management and Planning Office. And so I think this is a good time to just visit our education of employees and those who obviously need, I'm not sure exactly all who need to get ICS training, but just basic ICS training so we can staff that and be prepared and be able to respond. So that's something I would like to reach out to our employees and just make sure that, you know, figure out where everybody's at and then offer it to those who need it. Also, in that same mindset, this is just one of those situations where I think this is a really good opportunity to talk about preparedness. There was a lot of preparedness discussion regarding Camporee and all that, and having, you know, food available, fuel in your vehicles. Fire season, I think, in this fire itself are really good examples as to why those things are so important. And I think, in my limited perspective and opinion, that with all the Camporee preparation that we had ahead of this, within a few weeks ahead of this, I would think that a lot of people were actually had some of those resources they may not have had in anticipation of Camporee. But that's just more or less conjecture. So, and then finally, I just want to note that I personally have had a ton of unconditional support from the Office of Homeland Security. And then I want to just publicly thank Stephanie Conrad from Hot Springs County and the fact that she skipped the conference that we were going to go to and stayed here to be a help. So that way, when I was making phone calls, she was making phone calls, and we were able to divide and conquer, and that made things really efficient. So, and the only other thing I'd like to mention is just the fundraising efforts. I believe that all three of you are aware of that, but I think publicly it's important to mention, and I think Mr. Crago's work on that. I did speak with, and after writing those notes, I did speak with the organizers, and they've set up a website for online donations or where to send checks, in-kind donations, materials, volunteer work, and that's all found at johnsoncountyfirerelief.com. And so I've pushed that out on the Emergency Facebook page as well. And as far as I can tell, we're getting a lot of movement on that stuff. So it's very positive. That's all I got.
Jimmy, initially one of the biggest problems that we heard right after we declared our initial disaster declaration was the difficulty in communications between dispatch and incident command. So what are the steps we're going to take to fix that so that going forward, especially in a fire where they have their own incident command, we don't run into that situation again?
Right. So that is, I think, is worthy of conversations between some of the decision makers on that stuff. I had a really good line of communication between myself and dispatch, and so we were constantly talking back and forth on the first day. I was getting phone calls from incident command, and I think it's just worthy of having a meeting between myself and BLM and likely our dispatch supervision and probably the sheriff to just talk about what is the most efficient way to talk between the three of us, because when you're dealing with federal resources and then you're dealing with county resources, who do you decide who's going to be the main player here, and who do we call and where do we call? Because I know a lot was running out of Casper, and so the plan is to move forward and have conversations with these different decision makers about, and a lot of this comes out of lessons learned, because all this is going to generate after action reports, and so to have those conversations, and I feel like a debrief with some of those decision makers is vital to ironing those things out, finding out where the breakdowns happen, because I'm only one individual with one opinion or one perspective, to understand that how did they find out how to contact me, because I was getting phone calls through dispatch to talk to incident command, but I never really got to talk directly with them. And so really finding out, do we just have a physical location set up? Do we have some sort of other generalized sort of, you know, do we just defer to their dispatch? So I think that's worthy of a debrief, and that's the direction that I plan to go with this.
So would you anticipate in the next week, 2 weeks, when do you anticipate having that meeting? Because that needs to happen.
Right. I think this needs to happen once this incident management team is, they've given their after action and their notes, and then we can go over all of those things as one group.
That sounds fair enough. That's a good idea.
Very good job on handling of the disaster.
Thank you.
One of those things, until you had one, you really don't know what you don't have.
Right.
You know, I think for Code Red, there was a little panic. Some people don't totally understand it, so they hear it, and then they panic, and they're like, why are we getting Code Red? Because, you know, the fire's not right near us right now. I just seek some more communication, education on the whole process of Code Red through the community, through flyers, through radio, Facebook, maybe just to explain, you know, it's more of a heads up, like you were talking about with KC as a communication.
Right.
I think it would be beneficial also.
And I appreciate you bringing that up. That was something I had mentioned. I wanted to add to my notes, and I'd forgotten. And that's I did write up something that went out to the town hall meeting on Friday for residents, and really kind of described and outlined some of the Code Red system. And I think it's important to note that, you know, when you register your phone number, you also register an address. And so some folks that were getting notices who might not have been in the area likely have an address that are registered within the geographical areas that I designate. And a lot of those, when I get a call for a Code Red, I set up geographic parameters for, okay, do we want to, what kind of shade do we want? What kind of area coverage do we want? You know, and so a lot of times you create on this map this, you know, whatever shape you want. Typically it's, you know, circled. And so if somebody's residence falls in there, but they maybe are not physically present within that circle, they're still going to get the notice. Versus the people who are signed up for the system who don't live there but are physically present in the area within that geographic fence, then they're also going to get the notice. And so I think that created some confusion, especially if it's somebody who's moved. And a lot of folks just choose to sign up as a guest account because I don't have any control over the actual. If you create an account, I can't go in there and do anything for people. That's a third-party system. So if anybody used to live in that area and had an address registered in that area, or maybe a previous phone owner of that lived in that area, that also likely has an impact on it. So I think that's the only reason that it does create some confusion. But I think, I think it's worthy of a public campaign on that stuff. And that's something that, like last week at the senior center when I was signing folks up, we were trying to explain that. Which sometimes is difficult to explain what a geofence is to people who are not super techie. So it's been an interesting conversation to have, to say the least.
I'd rather see you warn people that don't need to be warned, but you miss somebody.
I absolutely agree.
I guess my only concern with the FEMA work is, I think you need to continue to gather all of our pertinent information and the likelihood that either some of the other counties choose not to participate or that the state is not successful in making it a complex rather than individual incidents. Experience with other counties across the country through NACO says that usually it is at least a year. Sometimes there are incidents 3 and 5 years. Counties have not been reimbursed by FEMA yet. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to make sure that we have all of our paperwork, all of our documentation, and all of our data in line and ready in the event the state cannot help us.
I agree. And I'm working to get as much of that as I can. So, and that's why some of the people in this recovery group are financial, like our some a representative for treasurer's office. I've asked for our county fire secretary to be a part of that, so I can get a lot of those other figures as well. And sometimes a lot of it is just getting a hold of folks, which has been a little bit of a challenge, given the fact that I think a lot of people are stretched really thin on some of this. And like I said about YDOT, you know, I had to physically go over there to find somebody, which was an effort in itself because a lot of them are stretched so thin out there trying to get fences back up and get livestock back where they need. So, but I am absolutely pursuing those things.
I'd like to commend YDOT. I mean, they have stepped up and they are getting things done out there.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I didn't mean that as a... but I think that it's just there's a lot of resources in a lot of places right now. So.
Any other questions for emergency management coordinator?
Thank you.
I'd like to welcome our fire warden up. An update on the command structure and anything else he'd like to share. And hopefully he can share some of the preliminary cost estimates that we've heard so we can dispel some of the public rumors about costs and why special districts have reserves and other important information.
So as of yesterday, for the house straw fire, we were sitting at $5,528,086. And with the other three fires, but the Buffalo complex is $14 million. Have you guys heard the breakdown of how many acres? And
we have.
So there's like 100, but we have 84% private and then like that. As the team goes, they're planning on transitioning Saturday morning. So we're going to do the team evaluation on Friday. Team will do their AAR on Saturday and be gone. And the fire would be turned over to the local jurisdiction. They want to turn it over to Type 4, but we just said we'd just take it local. So basically we can say we're done, and so we can start submitting all the bills into the EFSA.
So that $5 million, that is just Fire 1's... cost. So that
$5 million is a house draw fire.
And that doesn't include support out of Powder River Fire District, or is that lumped into that
field? No, that's all.
All?
The Johnson County's part of it.
So that's just $5 million of our dollars to fight that fire. Mm-hmm. And then that second figure, the $14 million, is that?
That's the whole complex. That was the Remington, Flat Top, Silver Spoon, and Constitution, and house draw.
And they're...
So we have... It's all broke out into fire because this is a FEMA fire. We have to have exact... So Chanda's been there every day doing all the finance for the district and, well, the county. She's doing Powder Rivers too, so... And she just basically hired on with this team just to handle the house draw fire. So she's doing all the finance, which she's done before, so... Yeah. So we have to treat this as an EFSA fire, suppression account. So all our equipment will only get reimbursed 25%, but the manpower will be 100%. And so they'll submit the bill to the state. If the state has enough money, they will pay us back, and then the state will bill the FEMA when they have all that, when it's all audited.
And that money for the fire suppression account, which is basically our insurance account, if you will,
right.
That's appropriated dollars from the legislature, is that correct? And that basically when those funds are exhausted, then either we've got to get the legislature to refill it, backfill it, or we sit and wait until FEMA reimburses them. Is that correct?
So on the EFSA, it's already been broke. And the governor's also funded it again for with another $25 million, which is about out. So he's to the point now where he doesn't know where he's going to be able to fund it from now on. So that'll be basically come back to the counties. But The other day visiting with him, he thought everything would be good for this year. His worry is about getting funded for next year. So with the new legislators and stuff coming in, and new appropriations committees. So that's where the battle begins. He said, this year, don't worry about it. We'll be funded, but next year could be a totally different situation. So with the bill going to Sheila down at State Forestry, she'll audit it and send that bill to FEMA. And like you said earlier, it could be 5 or 6 years before the state will see their money. It's quite the process.
With where we are in terms of fuel and everything else, Tittle, are you comfortable with where we are in the fire ban, or does it need to go above 7,000 feet? What do we need to do to protect?
So the BLM and Forest Service are not worried about the mountain.
Okay.
So we're, and we usually go what they want to do. So, and matter of fact, the BLM is already starting to look at prescribed fire on the mountain down around the bear trap area. And if I put the restrictions on there, they can't burn. I messed that up last year for them, so. So, and we have a really good working relationship with the BLM, so I don't want to ruin it. So we just did the cost share agreement, which I was going to bring up earlier. On the first day, the BLM picked up all the aircraft. And then after the first day, then the House Draw Fire had to pick up aircraft and whatever, so. But with the BLM only having like, what, 15% of it, they're, we're gonna have to absorb most of it up, most of the money.
How much was your air filter? Or your air?
That's something that I couldn't tell you.
Is that included in the $5 million?
Yep. If they have all their bills in, so that's the hard one to track is aircraft.
Certainly, I know they benefited. We just did a blanket agreement and. Mm-hmm. The last estimate I heard was about 94,000 gallons had been taken out of Lake DeSmit, which we'll report that to the state engineer's office, but we just made the water available.
Right. So, and then, so we'll also get billed for the aircraft, and then we'll get billed for the slurry also on that. And I haven't even heard how many gallons that was yet.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A lot of painted red spots.
Yeah, it was in the Red Hills. We can't tell.
So we'll expect to see that $5 million number go up.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be, I would almost venture it'll be around $6 million when it's all said. Because there's a lot of vendors and stuff that their bills aren't in yet. That, and trust me, Chanda gets after them and she wants bills so they can get that in there, but there's always them hidden ones that are in there.
How do you pay for the fire retardant? You pay for it by the gallon or by the draw?
By the gallon. So the seat bases that are like the one in Casper, one in Moreland, they have a seat base manager and he keeps track of all the gallons. Now the very large air tanker was coming out of Caldwell, Idaho. So to get that bill is going to be the tough one. So they were flying to Idaho back and forth. We were lucky we even got a very large air tanker on that.
And Tittle, was that the reason that we received the team from the Southwest? Was just because of they were next up and available? Or
they were the next one up national. Because all the Rocky Mountain teams were unavailable or out of assignment, so we got the one up next. So if we would have waited till Sunday, we would have got a Rocky Mountain team, but it was kind of too late.
Wait until January, you
could have
got
Larry. Yeah, right. Well, maybe. Mm-hmm.
So in terms of communication and use of Code Red, any takeaways that you think we need to be aware of, or how can we better handle our disaster situations?
I don't know. I thought it ran pretty smooth for what we have. You know, when Mother Nature takes over, we're just lucky we didn't get anybody hurt or killed. That's the big deal. Yeah, and structures. Well, about 4 or 5 hours into it, we finally just went to point protection, and that's the only thing you can do is we just started heading to the structures. And we tried to stop it on the interstate, but Kobe was sitting there with a tender on the road, and the fire went underneath the tender and sparked across on the other side. He has video of it. So it was just one of them firestorms that they said Cato was bad, 10 times worse than Cato.
So is this now the largest fire inside the state of Wyoming?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the Mullins was the largest, but that was Colorado included, the acreage in Colorado. Sole Wyoming fire is this house draw lands. Something to be proud of.
Yeah. I had a call this morning from a concerned Southern Johnson County person. It said that Johnson Air, the Powder Fire District, didn't have a way to load their tender without going back into KC to buy air to get water. Is that something that we need to be concerned about?
I don't know what they're talking about. There was an 8,000-gallon tender with them all night long. Nick Zizes had his with them all night, and we had our 2,500-gallon tender with them all night. So I don't know where that's coming from. And we even sent engines from here to help Mark that night. We had 2 engines down there. Well, that's just...
He said they couldn't load their water trucks from reservoir or anything. They had to go back and forth.
Yeah, I don't know where... But what I was told, I know what was out there, so evidently they didn't know where they were at, or... You know, there's... And that's the problem with everybody wanting to come help, the accountability. I knew where all our folks were at. I don't know where everybody else is at. So that's why we have fire departments, the structure we have, for accountability.
And Bill, I think that's one of the key things, the fact that we didn't have anybody get injured is
amazing.
We made people that were out helping, and the way the winds were shifting, the fact that we were able to make sure we knew where most everyone was, and that we were able to keep them safe. You can rebuild a house, but you can't rebuild a life.
That's right. So about an hour into this, I ate it with Justin Heller and 2 BLM trucks. They took the one fire. I took the other with a blade. And we'd anchored in and we started off. Within 15 minutes, the other fire had caught us, and we had to take a run for it. And we had to go off down into a draw and hide, and then... It was probably a half hour later, it was 4 miles ahead of us. That's how fast that was moving.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the winds need to find fuels.
Find fuel and hot, you know, single digit humidity were 40, 50 mile an hour. Just... Hopefully we don't have to do it again anytime soon.
Days hot and dry, we will.
Yeah. So with this week's forecast, we have a cold front coming through with a lot of lightning, so I guess we'll see. So anything else?
Questions, and we also have a couple members of the press if they have follow-on questions from anything that the fire warden gave in his report.
Well, thanks for your support all week long, or 10 days or whatever it's been.
So
basically, I know both fire departments are ready to go again, so we're all ready and everybody's rested up. And the only bad part is it's getting into hunting season, so we're going to lose all our folks.
The state of Iowa, the state forest department certainly helped Powder River Fire District out a lot.
Yeah. So right now the BLM has brought in I don't know how many severity engines, and they're staged here and in Campbell County with overhead and everything to go with them until we get some moisture. And the working relationship with them is just phenomenal. So hats off to the BLM. And the Forest Service was even helping us. So
thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. You guys have a great day.
You as well.
Oh, yeah.
Commissioner, before we move to vouchers, could I have a motion to approve a letter to Governor Gordon retroactively for the USDA disaster declaration?
Make a motion to approve the letter to Governor Gordon for the USDA disaster declaration.
Back to that one. There is a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, that brings us time now of vouchers. The clerk's office circulated the vouchers. There were $906,888.11. Commissioners, did you have any questions on the vouchers?
I didn't see anything that raised any red flags to me. I make a motion that we approve the voucher for 906, 888, 11.
I'll second that. There is a motion and a second. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Before we open it up for public comment, just a couple of reminders. 6 p.m. tonight, Planning and Zoning has a meeting. At 8 a.m. tomorrow in the chambers, the Fire Relief Fund committee will have a organizing meeting with all of their volunteers. And then for all the landowners impacted, 5 p.m. on Thursday at the library, Weeding Pests is leading the first of many discussions on the recovery effort for noxious and invasive grasses. So at this time, I would welcome any public comment or discussion. Hearing no public comment, I would entertain a motion to move into executive session under the portion of state statute that covers real estate transactions. Is there a motion?
Motion we move into executive session for real estate transactions.
Well, second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
This audio was brought to you by Cotant Family Dentistry, where advanced dental technology meets compassionate, patient-centered care.